Lecture 28, Athenian Successes and a Temporary Peace.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. In this lecture, we're going to take events in the Peloponnesian War down to the Peace of Nicias in 421 BC. And this peace was a temporary cessation of hostilities within the war itself. We're going to focus on the successful Athenian campaign at Pylos and the island of Sphacteria in 425 and 424 BC in some detail. And this involves an analysis of Cleon's role in political affairs, where I take a very different and a far more positive view of his role. And we're going to end this lecture with the Battle of Amphipolis in 422, in which Cleon and the Spartan general Brasidas died, and which led to that Peace of Nicias. In 425, an Athenian fleet headed for Sicily dropped off a contingent of troops at Pylos, which was in the southwest Peloponnese. It's on a bay across from a narrow island called Sphacteria. This, by the way, is the modern Bay of Navarino. The troops were under the command of Demosthenes. Now, this is not the Demosthenes who is the famous orator from the later 4th century that we've talked about from time to time. This is a different Demosthenes. And Demosthenes gave his men orders to fortify Pylos. Whether this was part of some predetermined plan or to stop the men simply getting bored, no one is sure. My belief is that it was deliberate policy, that the fortification of Pylos followed on from the annual periplus, that annual sailing around the Peloponnese of the 100 Athenian ships that was part of Pericles' strategy. And fortifying Pylos meant that this was an attack, if you like, on Sparta itself. The Athenians were trying to grasp Sparta by its Achilles heel. Pylos was in Messenia, home of the Helots. Why else would you fortify a place in Messenia unless you were trying to whip up the Helots in some way? The Athenians, I suspect, were trying to establish a base to stir the Helots to possible revolt even. And this would have distracted Sparta's attention from Athens immediately. By 425, the period that we're currently looking at, Sparta had made some inroads in Boeotia at the request of Thebes. And in fact, 2 years earlier, in 427, it had destroyed the pro-Athenian town of Plataea. Now, since Boeotia bordered directly on Attica's northern border, as we know, the Athenians may have been viewing with no small alarm the growth of Spartan influence to their north. And so, 2 years later in 425, they decided to do something about it. Hence, fortify Pylos to try to divert Sparta's attention from Athens. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Needless to say, the Spartans didn't take the Athenian fortification of Pylos lying down. They deployed 420 Peloponnesian hoplites to the island of Sphacteria, and they sent a further force by sea to eject the Athenians from Pylos. As soon as he heard of what the Spartans were up to, Demosthenes sent an urgent request for help to the Athenian fleet. That's the same fleet that had just dropped him off. And it immediately returned to Pylos. And on its return, a naval battle was fought in the Bay of Pylos, which resulted in a decisive Athenian victory. Once again, the superiority of the Athenian navy is proved. However, the 420 Peloponnesian troops that had been dropped off early on Sphacteria were now cut off. And the Athenians now blockaded them on that island. And what's more, of these 420 Peloponnesian troops, 120 of them were Spartiates. The rest, as I said, were from Sparta's allies in the Peloponnesian League. Now, this defeat in the Bay of Pylos and then the subsequent blockade of Sphacteria had surprising results in Sparta. Because out of the blue, the Spartan government sued for peace with Athens. And in the process, it asked for safe passage for the 420 troops on the island of Sphacteria. Now, this is startling. The Spartans suing for peace. We're accustomed now to the Spartan ethos of dying in battle or having your mother kill you if you come home as part of a defeated force. So we need to try and come up with an explanation for why the Spartans sued for peace like this. We would surely expect that the 120 Spartiates on Sphacteria would be sacrificed by the state. Losses of war. In fact, we'd even think that those Spartiates on the island would expect to be abandoned. But far from it. So what's going on here? Well, there's no compelling reason why the Spartans took the course of action they did with the Athenians. There is not one definitive answer. Perhaps their appeal for peace might be linked to the declining manpower problems that the Spartans were facing, as we talked about in Lecture 16. Remember that the entire core of Ephebs was wiped out in that great earthquake of 464. And we're now in 425. Now, 120 soldiers on Sphacteria doesn't sound a lot, does it? But if the Spartans were desperate to get them back because of manpower shortages, then we can see how seriously that earthquake, 40 years ago, had affected them. Now, all of a sudden, the Athenians had the chance to end hostilities. Cleon was now kingpin in the assembly, but what he did has earned him pretty much universal condemnation on the part of modern historians. He persuaded the people to reject the Spartan overtures for peace. Now, at first sight, this seems rash, especially as the Athenians were still recovering from the plague that had run its course in about 428, but it took 15 years or so for the Athenians to recover fully from it. And as I said, modern historians have condemned Cleon for this course of action. I think he was right. You see, when the Spartans, or rather what the Spartans wanted, put my other teeth in today, what the Spartans wanted was an armistice. And an armistice is not a peace. It's really no more than a truce, is it? Cleon, I think, rightly saw that any truce, well, let's use that word, any truce agreed to at this time on terms that left the Spartans as powerful as they were at the start of the war would be ephemeral. Because once the Spartans got their troops back from Sphacteria, then it would be a return to the days of 431. The resources on each side hadn't diminished that much. Now remember Thucydides' truest explanation for the war. And this truest explanation was Sparta's fear of the growth in Athens' power. Now this wasn't going to abate. The Athenians, if war ended now, would then focus on extending their empire. That's what they've been doing since they founded the thing in 478, the Delian League. The Spartans would continue to be afraid of the growth in Athens' power. So eventually, the two sides would clash again. A truce now, an armistice, call it what you like, wouldn't achieve anything in the long run. Cleon, I would argue, knew the value of imposing terms on the Spartans. And the only way to impose terms on them was by defeating them fair and square, not agreeing to let them get troops back that would, as I said, restore the status quo. Cleon then saw the value in taking these soldiers alive because they would be security against future Spartan invasions of Attica. Remember the Spartan strategy of the annual invasion? And moreover, they would give the Athenians an upper hand in peace negotiations. So Cleon rightly advised the Athenians to reject Sparta's offer and to besiege Sphacteria with a view to capturing those Peloponnesian hoplites on it. Now, this is a heresy. I didn't start my remarks on Cleon by saying you're going to hear a heresy, but I'm pretty sure that you worked this out along the way. I like Cleon. I don't think he deserves the bad press, and I'm going to defend him a lot in this lecture. Now, the siege of Sphacteria was entrusted to the aristocratic and wealthy general Nicias. And his background made him a natural enemy of a demagogue like Cleon. For some reason, Nicias wasn't able to capture the troops on the island. And as the siege grew protracted and costly, the initial euphoria of the Athenians dissipated. This is normal human behavior. You're euphoric at the start, and then as something carries on, you start to get disillusioned with it. Why is it taking so long? The Athenians' discontent is shown at an assembly meeting at which Cleon attacked Nicias for his inefficiency. Now, Thucydides tells us about this assembly clash. And what he does, though, which I find very interesting, is that he gives us the speeches of Nicias and Cleon in reported or indirect speech. He doesn't quote them, you know, verbatim in inverted commas, like he quoted verbatim in inverted commas the speeches of Cleon and Diodotus in the Mytilene debate. Cleon apparently tore into Nicias for his bungling and for his caution, and he began to boast that if he, Cleon, were in charge, he would end the siege. Apparently, says Thucydides, this appealed to the crowd of citizens present, who shouted even more in favor of Cleon. And Thucydides goes on to say that this shouting was normal for a mob. And this is how he contemptuously calls the people because of the political power they have. Thucydides very much dislikes the power of the people. Now, we get reminded again then of the view that the aristocrats had to popular power. And we also get an insight into how noisy assemblies could be. And let's not forget the point I made in a previous lecture, that if the statistic is right, that only about 20% of the people present could hear about 85% of what was going on. Now, according to Thucydides, Nicias suddenly called what he thought was Cleon's bluff. And he told him to go and do the job if he thought he could do it better than him, Nicias. When Cleon couldn't wriggle out of the situation, as he tried to do at first, and as the crowd cried out even more to him to go to Sphacteria and capture the troops there, he suddenly requested Demosthenes as partner in the venture. He demanded various troops, and then he declared dramatically that he would return victorious in 20 days. Now, the Athenians laughed at this, says Thucydides, because they knew they would win either way. In other words, either Cleon would live up to his promise. Thucydides calls it a mad promise, by the way. Either Cleon would live up to his promise, and so they'd end up with Spartan prisoners in Athens, which would be a good thing, or he would die trying to capture them, and hence all of Athens would be better off without him. Now, to everyone's surprise, Cleon and Demosthenes captured the Spartan troops on Sphacteria, and they brought them back to Athens within 20 days. Apparently, they just set fire to the island. And of course, people run from fire, so they were just waiting at the other end and mopped up. Now, of the original contingent of 420 soldiers, only 292 were left. But 120 of these were Spartiates. So these 120 Spartiates were indeed a prize capture. And although the war continued, the presence of Spartan prisoners in Athens ended the annual invasions of Attica. And that's something that Cleon had predicted when he said, we need to take these Spartan troops alive. Now, there's no question that Pylos Facteria was a major victory. And Cleon's influence in Athens dramatically increased. After the troops on Sphacteria were captured, Cleon left Demosthenes behind to engage in mopping up operations, and he himself returned to Athens with the prisoners. Cleon was elected strategos general for the following year. And this is rather a reversal of the pattern of those who use the generalship as a stepping stone to political life, isn't it? Also in 424, Cleon increased the pharos, since Athens was in a bad way financially. And in some cases he doubled, and in other cases he tripled the amount of tribute an ally was to pay. And as a result, the pharos increased to an annual income of 1,500 talents. Now, needless to say, the allies saw this as an act of despotism. Cleon also increased jury pay, by the way, from the 2 obol daily payment that Pericles had introduced in the 450s to 3 obols a day. And perhaps this was meant to be some sort of recompense, some compensation for those farmers whose lands were ravaged in the previous Spartan invasions. Now, just when you thought it was safe to go in the water, heresy time again. No one, as far as I know, has ever really given the clash in the assembly between Cleon and Nicias more than passing attention. But I think there's a lot going on here. The common opinion is that Cleon backed himself into a corner with a lot of bar talk, but fortunately for him, when he got to Sphacteria, the more militarily experienced Demosthenes was there to bail him out. This is kind of the view that Thucydides gives us, and it's certainly what modern historians echo. But I disagree with this completely. For one thing, when Cleon was given this charge by the assembly to go to Sphacteria, he immediately trotted out an impressive list of specialist troops, archers, infantry, troops like that, and these he wanted to take to Demosthenes. Now, you don't have these sorts of details inside your head if all you're going to do at an assembly is stand up and verbally trash someone else. Cleon was by now, in 424, the seasoned politician. He wasn't a military tactician. Demosthenes, on the other hand, was a general by now, a strategos, but he wasn't a political speaker. If Cleon had asked for these troops and the command of them against Sphacteria off the bat when he first stood up in the assembly, he would have got nowhere with the people. But I can quite easily see Demosthenes telling Cleon what troops he needed, and Cleon manipulating the crowd against Nicias to make it seem like Nicias had backed him into a corner. And then, well, okay, I'll take on this job after all, but I'll need such and such. The Pylos Facterian campaign was an enormous win for the Athenians. But the odium attached to the rhetores, the orators, is seen in how Thucydides and his contemporary Aristophanes, the comic playwright, treated the victory. Thucydides glosses over it. He doesn't even have grudging praise for Cleon. Perhaps that's why he gives us only the barest outline of the assembly clash between Cleon and Nicias. He doesn't give us the speeches of each one, but merely a sort of paraphrase of them, reported speech. And he does that because Cleon did well, and Thucydides doesn't really want to spend time highlighting a guy that he dislikes so much. And his account is also manipulated so that we end up feeling sorry for Nicias. Poor old Nicias, being abused the way he was by this upstart Cleon. He ought to stay in his tanning shop. Yet, and this is often not mentioned, it was Nicias who handed over his command to Cleon. And as a result, Nicias ought to have suffered censure from the people for that. It wasn't his job to resign from his command. But Nicias is not abused for it, even though we know that the Athenians are quick to censure ineptitude, disloyalty, treachery on the part of their elected officials. Even worse is the portrayal of the Pylos-Sphacterian campaign in the comic play Knights, which was performed in 424, the same year as the Sphacterian campaign, and it was written by Aristophanes. Now, in this play, Aristophanes cast Cleon as a Paphlagonian slave, a slave from Paphlagonia. He was evil, he was a venal man, and he has bewitched the people of Athens. And the people of Athens are cast by Aristophanes as an old, gullible man named Demas. And Demas, as we've said before, is the technical term for the Athenian citizenry. Now, Cleon is trashed in this play, and at one point, two slaves of Demos, who are coincidentally, called Demosthenes and Nicias, complain that Cleon stole all the credit due to Demosthenes for the victory at Pylos. It's because Cleon has done so well that he has to be disregarded or trashed. If he'd messed up at Sphacteria, we can plausibly imagine Thucydides and Aristophanes would have a field day with him. Now, the Pylos-Sphacterian campaign was the high point of the Archidamian War for the Athenians, and to an extent, it lulled them into overcommitment. Flush with success, there was a move now to abandon Pericles' second prong of his strategy of not extending the frontiers of the Athenian Empire. And this is seen in the imperialistic invasion of Boeotia in 424. Thebes was doing its utmost to assert its hegemony over Boeotian towns. And Thebes' alliance with Sparta was a major cause for concern. Now, it's significant that Nicias took no part in this venture in the Athenian invasion of Boeotia. And that's not because he was against this enterprise, but probably because he was still living down the humiliation of handing over his command to Cleon and seeing Cleon do what Nicias, the elected strategos, couldn't do, and do in 20 days to boot. Now, although the Athenians gained some successes in Boeotia, they suffered a major defeat at Delium in 424 that undid all their gains in Boeotia to date. But the worst loss for the Athenians, though, was that of their former colony of Amphipolis in Thrace. This had been founded in 434, and it was located close to rich natural and timber reserves. In 424, the Spartans began to get involved in the Chalcidice region, where their general Brasidas won over a number of Athenian allies to the Spartan side. Apparently, these allies were not happy with the increase in the Pharos that Cleon had arranged, and the Macedonian king at this time, who's now called Perdiccas, also supported them. Now, the increasing Spartan influence in the north worried the Athenians because of the need to preserve their influence there in this region. I mean, let's not forget why they got involved in Potidaea in 432 to protect their interests up there. Nothing has changed since 432. Well, when Brasidas turned his attention to Amphipolis, Athens deployed a force northwards under the command of Thucydides the historian. He arrived too late to save Amphipolis. Apparently, Brasidas didn't need to storm the place because the people of Amphipolis voluntarily opened their gates to Brasidas. So, although Thucydides can't be blamed for any of this, nevertheless, he was exiled from Athens for 20 years, and Cleon may have been behind this move. Brasidas now began to turn the war in favor of Sparta, even though the Athenians still held the Spartan captives from Sphacteria. Now, the loss of Amphipolis and the Spartan gains allowed Nicias to regain some of his influence in the assembly. He was moderate in his politics. He was a pacifist. And, naturally, he clashed with Cleon. But the Spartan government was also in favor of peace. But by now, they were also coming to distrust Brasidas. Brasidas seems to have been something of a loose cannon. His activities were a cause of concern back in Sparta. And so, thanks to this Spartan attitude and Nicias's urgings, a one-year truce was drawn up between Athens and Sparta in 423. Now, this truce was soon shattered by Brasidas's activities in northern Greece. There, he encouraged the city of Scione in the Chalcidice to revolt from Athens. And this move allowed Cleon to disparage the Spartans in the assembly, and as a result, in 422, when the truce expired, Cleon, who was elected strategos again, was able to persuade the assembly to send troops under his command to reconquer Amphipolis. Now that, of course, meant a showdown with Sparta. At Amphipolis, Cleon and Brasidas met in battle. According to Thucydides, Cleon acted prematurely, and as a result, his troops engaged the Spartans too soon. At any rate, the Athenians lost the Battle of Amphipolis. However, Cleon and Brasidas were killed in it. And yet, even in death, Thucydides has nothing good to say about Cleon. He says that he never intended to stand his ground, but that he fled and was speared in the back as he ran away. In fact, Thucydides speaks more glowingly of Brasidas' death. And yet, Brasidas was the enemy. By the way, the Athenian assembly resolved to kill all the men of Scione and enslave the women and children. Now that's precisely what Cleon had advocated for Mytilene in 427. And look how he was ripped apart for that by Thucydides. Now, the Athenians, by the way, will actually do the same thing to the little island of Melos in the Cyclades in 416. So, again, what Cleon had proposed in 427 was not uncommon. Cleon, I think, was one of the better demagogues, and I think that he doesn't deserve the bad press that Thucydides, Aristophanes, and even a century later the Athenian constitution give him. Cleon may well have had a hidden agenda. He may well have acted in the city's best interests at times, and in his own best interests at times. But I think he was right to reject the Spartan overtures for peace in 425, and he did engineer a great victory at Sphacteria in 424. Cleon saw the need to counter Spartan influence in the north, and although he was clearly not the man to beat Brasidas in battle, he did lead a force north, and he did stand against him. He wasn't a coward. We have no evidence to support Thucydides' account of how Cleon died, or that he was thinking of deserting. How would Thucydides know what was going through Cleon's mind anyway? The one person in these years who doesn't command much respect is Nicias, but no one says anything bad about him. Why not? He's an aristocrat. He's from the right side of the tracks. Now, the Battle of Amphipolis was decisive in that Brasidas' death ended Spartan policies in the north, and Cleon's death allowed Nicias to dominate the assembly. Both sides were ready for peace, and after negotiations during the winter of 422-421, the Peace of Nicias was agreed to in March of 421. It was supposed to last for 50 years, and among its terms was that Sparta would remain hegemon of the Peloponnesian League, and Athens would remain hegemon of its empire. Athens was also supposed to restore Pylos and return the prisoners of war from Sphacteria, and Sparta was supposed to hand over Amphipolis. However, neither side honored this part of the deal. And to make matters worse, the key Spartan allies of Corinth, Megara, and Boeotia refused to agree to the peace. They refused to sign it. Corinth was still after blood from its defeats at the hands of the Athenians off Corcyra and at Potidaea. Megara was still smarting from the Megarian decree, plus Athens held its port, Nicaea. And during the peace negotiations that led to the Peace of Nicias, the Spartans could have insisted on the Athenians returning Nicaea to Megara, but they didn't. So that upset the Megarians. Finally, the Boeotians, under the terms of the peace, had to hand over a border fortress called Panactum to Athens. They not only refused to hand it over, but they destroyed it. So in 421, the big question was not whether the Peace of Nicias would last for 50 years, but how long would it last before hostilities broke out again? And what direction would the war take after hostilities broke out again? We'll find out the answers to these questions in our next lecture. Thank you very much.